This is a big box of different images of art or alleged art. So if you want to come up and pick three of these images that you find really compelling.
So we get three.
Yeah.
Where
to put these?
Spread them out here.
Yeah. So
you probably have some more.
So three of these images that you find really compelling or interesting. Not necessarily you like them, but just you find them interesting.
Are they the same or
do they look the same?
I mean, what am I saying? Is this the same?
No, there's one of each. Maybe there's duplicates of a couple, but it's a random. I just divided the list, the pile randomly. So you're only going to spend a small chunk of time on these images, so don't feel like you're committing yourself for the whole hour or anything. It's a fairly short thing you're going to do with those images. So just pick three that you find compelling in some way. So while we're introducing ourselves, I'm going to gather these up and put them over here for folks that are just coming in. Welcome. Oh, no, that's great. No worries. So your first assignment is to pick three of these images that you find interesting in some way for an exercise we're going to do later. And to introduce ourselves today, what I would like you to do is just tell me your name and where you are coming to Holden from, wherever you consider your home, and what, when you think of Holden, what do you think Holden smells like? What is
right
the smell
now,
that
right
most
now.
Reminds
yeah,
you?
Right.
What is the smell that most reminds you of Holden?
Or the fire.
So Trish, you want to start?
I'm Trish. I came from near Minneapolis, but I love the northern part of the state more. Mm-hmm. And since I came down to the kitchen at midnight one time for a bowl of cereal and smelled Terry roasting barley in the kitchen. That
roasted barley. Wow.
My name is Casey, and I come from Shelley 9, it's top of the hill.
Shelley 9.
Before you came to Holden.
And smell in the summer, like the smell of sun-baked pine needles, like when you're making.
Nice. Hi.
I'm your turn.
Well, he wants me to go first. I'm Charlene, and I was here 21 years ago and for a short time, so these workshops are special now because I never got to do them before. And I guess walking into the mess hall, just smelling the aroma of bread, that's my smell that I remember.
I'm John. From Pullman, Washington.
Whereabouts?
Pullman.
Okay.
What do you like to smell here?
What do I like to smell? I like the outdoor forest smells.
I'm Otto, and I live in Kirtland when I'm not here. Yes. Smelling sweaty socks after a hike to Heart Lake.
I can't say that I associate Holden with any smells in particular, but we usually have candles over there, so I associate it with the smell of candles.
Mm-hmm. I'm Liz, I'm from Wenatchee. I think of it as the freshness of the air.
Mm-hmm.
Except now. Yeah. Well,
visually it's changing every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My name's Laura, and I come from Seattle. And I guess the smell is also food most of the time, especially on bread baking day. Mm-hmm. It sort of is over the entire village. But also, as the buses take off down below at Lucerne, there's always that mixture of dust and diesel fuel, and you know, we're on our way.
Yeah.
I'm Adrienne. I'm from Belfair, Washington, which is near about half an hour from Bremerton.
Mm-hmm.
Different smells. The freshness, So someone else mentioned when you first come into the village, and then of course the bread. Mm-hmm. But also the other smells of food. A variety.
Well, I'm Wendy, and thank you all for coming, and some of you have been here every day this week, which I really appreciate. This may not sound like a positive smell, but when I got here, I had a friend staying with me, and so her cot was blocking the closet, so I wasn't able to use the closet. And one of my other housemates, Kathleen, who is teaching yoga this week, which I highly recommend if you have not been yet, she said, "My closet smells like my horse's blanket after a rainstorm and a hard ride." She said, "I know that's not going to seem positive to you, but it's a very warm, positive smell to me." And so today my friend left on the bus, sadly, and so her cot is folded up, so I was able to open my closet door, and that's exactly what my closet smells like, too. So I didn't miss not having a closet. So today we're going to talk about smell and other aspects of the sensory world and how we can put them into our writing. And this is something that comes very easily to some people. Some of us really notice the sensory world. We notice what things sound like and smell like and look like and the quality of the air and the quality of the light. And some of us don't. And usually there's one sense that we tend to focus on more. We're a person who remembers sound, or we're a person who remembers smells, or we're a person who remembers sort of how the light moves in a space. And by the end of the hour, we will have tried to think about all of them. So some of the exercises might be easier for you than others, depending on what kind of memory you have. Or if you're a person who really is much more based in, you know, the verbal or analytical world, this all might seem very unfamiliar. But I want to start with a couple of quotes that I really love. And maybe while I'm writing these up on the board so we can talk about them, if you all could gather up the cards that you didn't choose, just so they're not distracting you. I'm going to write a couple of quotes up so we can talk about them. One is, which I'll talk about the writer once I get them up here. So the first, this is a quote from a writer named Heather Sellers, who teaches in Michigan at a college called Hope College. And this is from a really wonderful book that she wrote. If you're interested in sort of delving into the world of creative writing, I highly recommend her book, which is called Practically, The Practice of Creative Writing. And it covers nonfiction and fiction and poetry. So one of the things that she says in this book is, in art, wisdom is anchored in the sensory world. Which is one of the ways that art is really different from most other of our, you know, pursuits in the humanities, in that philosophy and theology and a lot of the other humanities are much more anchored in word and in theory, not in the sensory world. So Heather's idea is that this is what separates art from the other humanities, and particularly writing. That writing that sort of aspires to have some kind of artistic component to it needs to be anchored in the sensory world, in what we as human beings hear and feel and can taste or can touch or can see. And then the other quote, which is sort of saying the same thing but in a more blanket way, is from the poet William Carlos Williams. Is there anyone here who's not heard of William Carlos Williams? He is one of the best-known poets of the last century. He was a medical doctor who wrote poetry. He probably, unfortunately, is best known for one of his poems called The Red Wheelbarrow, which is a very short poem that I absolutely guarantee that if you attended school in the United States, you encountered this poem in one of your English textbooks. And you probably, it might be the poem that made you decide that you never really wanted anything to do with poetry again. But he wrote very short poems. He did other kinds of writing as well, but he's best known for his poems that have very short lines and a very short number of lines. He was one of the first poets in the U.S. to really delve into free verse as opposed to poetry that has rhyme and particular meter to it. And he said that one of the reasons he wrote very short poems was because he was a medical doctor, he's a pediatrician, and he worked, all that he had with him to write during the day between patients was his little prescription pad. And so he would write poems on his prescription pad, and that determined his primary form. He also wrote really wonderful essays. But what he says, no ideas but in things, this is something that when I teach undergraduates that my students tend to have a really hard time with, because they are very accustomed to writing that is all about ideas and doesn't have any objects in it. They're used to taking classes of theology and philosophy and courses that the writing is all about argumentation and ideas, not about things that actually exist in the world. So these are the two statements that are going to sort of guide us today in terms of trying to anchor what we're writing in the things that are around us and things that have texture and smells and sounds, etc. So any other thoughts or comments about these two quotes or the ideas that they're presenting here before we get started with writing?
I would just add that some mathematicians and some people who think abstractly claim that that the ideas as they come to them have shape and color and form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here, there are both of these quotes, the writers, Heather Sellers and Wim Carlos Worms, are talking specifically about writing. Not ideas as we get them in our mind so much, because we have different ways of forming our ideas in our minds depending on our own brain biology and how we were raised and culture, etc. But once you actually write things down. And then when Heather Sellers just says in art, she's talking about written work, not necessarily visual art or sculptural art or other kinds of, or performing art. So this is what we're going to try and have guide us today, is anchor the memories and the things we want to write about in the sensory world, in things that people reading what we're writing can imagine in their minds in terms of what things look like and sound like and smell like, etc. And depending on how you as an individual tend to register your memories and tend to interact in the world, that might be a really easy, straightforward thing to do, or you might feel pretty tired by the end of the hour. But luckily, what comes after this is dinner, so you'll get to recharge yourself. It's interesting teaching at a different time every day and feeling like there's a very different energy that we have depending on where we are in our daily cycle. So I want to start by having you take those images. And this might be an exercise where it might be easier if you spread out a little bit so you can look at the image and be writing at the same time. And I realize that's really hard to do when you're writing on your lap. So you might want to have an empty chair next to you that you can put them on, or put them on the hearth in front of you, whatever is easiest for you. But what I want you to do is look at just one of these images to start with. We're going to write for 5 minutes. You might spend that entire 5 minutes on this one image. Or if you find yourself getting stuck or you were sick of this image, just move on to the next one. And if you work your way through all three, and the 5 minutes isn't up yet, you feel free to grab another card if you want to, or to just go back to the first one and try again. So mostly what you have here are images of some kind, either of abstract art or art that has some aspect of abstraction in it. They basically are postcards that I have been gathering over most of my life. A lot of them are blank. Some of them you might actually have a note that was written to me many, many years ago or written to my mother. But don't worry about the words. Just look at the image. And we're going to do a 5-minute free writing exercise, which means for those of you that haven't been here earlier in the week, that you're just going to start writing and not stop until the 5 minutes is up. And the idea is that if you just keep writing rather than stopping and thinking about what you're writing or going back and rereading what you're writing, that it's more likely that you'll be able to access the more creative part of your brain. Because the conscious editing, censoring part of your brain really only kicks in if you go back and if you stop and think about what you're writing. If you just keep writing, whatever comes to mind, you're more likely to end up with something interesting. So what I want you to do is look at whatever the first image is that you have picked. Look at them one at a time, so just have one in front of you. And we're going to write for 5 minutes about what does this image smell like? If this image had a scent, what would it be?
So we just do the one card.
Yep, and if you run out of steam, you can move to the next.
What's the smell like? Okay.
So if this image had a scent, what would it be? And I'll let you know when we're getting close to 5 minutes. Okay. So how did that go?
That was hard.
This one was not easy. Okay.
Did anyone find it easy?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody?
Oh. Well, all I didn't
threads.
Really think it was that difficult for me. I chose this card because of the colors, and unfortunately I read what it meant of it, because that was not my first impression.
Huh.
So I wrote down my impressions.
So a couple people found it fairly easy. It seems like more people found it not easy at all. And that's, so how many are there? 2, 4, 6, 8, there are 9 of us. So 2 out of 9 people finding it not so hard is usually what I find with percentages, because our sense of smell is something that we're not, you know, our society doesn't really attune us to it. You know, we're mostly attuned to think primarily about how things look. I mean, we are a highly, highly visual culture. And I think that's partly because we've moved toward media that are primarily visual in terms of how we get our information, how we entertain ourselves. And some of the senses that focus more on scent, for example, if you make wine or if you are a cook or if you are a baker. You know, there are activities in which scent is very important, but they tend to not be things that all of us do. They're things that are considered kind of specialized activities. And even with sound, some of us are musicians. In some cultures, everyone is a musician. Everyone knows how to either sing or play something. And for those of you that have traveled to other cultures, you might have had the experience of being asked to sing or play something, because the assumption is that, of course, you do. And that is one of my lifelong fears, is having to do that, because my life is not at all musical, unfortunately. But we, as a society, tend to be more focused on the visual. And you'll notice this sometimes in writing, where the author tells you in great detail how things look, but not how things sound, or how they smell, or how the air is moving in a room, or what the textures are. And the next time you're reading something where you feel absolutely present in that place, you can imagine this whole world that the author is building for you. Take a look at the page or whatever the length of the description is and notice what the author is telling you about the setting. And they're probably not just telling you how it looks. You're probably learning other parts of, you know, the sensory detail about this place. So this is, if you can learn how to include some of those other details in your writing will really instantly become much more compelling, and your readers are much more likely to stay with you because they feel that they're being, you know, led through this place. They're not just being shown a place. It's not, you know, it becomes a house, not a picture of a house. But it's not something that we really are attuned to do. And the other thing is, we're not really given a good vocabulary for scent.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I usually do, but because we don't have the same kind of access to regular media, I didn't have it for you today, is often I'll read, when I do this workshop, the descriptions of wines. Because even though they're talking about taste, a huge component of taste is scent. And the words that are used to describe wines are ridiculous. You know, they talk about earthy notes, and they talk about pine notes, and they talk about citrus notes, Has anyone ever seen the wheel that's all the different kinds of scents that are supposed to go into wine that that people that judge wine use? It's an incredible list, because it has a whole bunch of words that relate the wine to different kinds of dirt. And there are a whole bunch of words that relate the wine to different kinds of trees and things that we do not think of as edible. And if you taste the wine and you actually look at this list of words, you can kind of see what they're talking about, even though it seems illogical to describe something that you're going to drink and enjoy as similar to dirt or a particular kind of soil. But those kinds of apparently illogical comparisons are often the words that are most effective in getting across a sense of what something smells like. But it's a skill that requires practice, because we're not often asked to do that. And usually what ends up happening, and I'd be interested to know how many of you had in your piece of writing, you compared it to what something, they're just direct comparisons. You're not actually describing a scent, you're saying it smells like bread, it smells like some other object. So the word like might appear a lot in your description, where you're essentially giving little equations.
What are some good vocabulary words for smell? Like I can smell what my picture means to me, but I have no idea the language for it.
Well, I would recommend one of those little wheels that I'm trying to remember what they're called. There's a name for them. But if you just Google, back when you are in the land of internet, wine description, it will come up. And they'll have all these different kinds of descriptions. It's also something, I'm trying to think of other areas that use it. If you read writing about food, which honestly is something that I find really boring. I mean, I like eating food, I like making food, I don't like reading about food. But writers who write about food really well have a really rich vocabulary of what things smell like. So reading even, usually not so much restaurant reviews, but if you read, what is her name? M.K.S. Fisher, who is a writer who writes a lot about food. Her descriptions of food are quite incredible, and they're really based on what things smell like. And this is also something that just doing a brainstorm for yourself, actually smelling something, and this is another exercise that I've done in the past. I didn't want to do it here just because sometimes people have allergic reactions, which is not good in a really remote area. But I'll bring in scents like the smell of vanilla or the smell of vinegar and have people smell it without telling them what it is, and that often triggers really interesting descriptions or memories. One of the other reasons that I think we have a hard time describing scent is that, to the extent that we understand where different kinds of information and experience are processed in our brain, that's a very young and imprecise science. But the center that seems to process the data that we collect through our nose is very close to where we process emotion and where we store long-term memories. So I'm sure you've all had the experience of smelling something and immediately being transported back to a moment in your childhood or a moment very, very long ago, even if it's an emotional memory more than a verbal narrative memory. And incidentally, it is also very, very far from the part of our brain that processes language. So to the extent that different parts of our brain relate to each other, it's very hard for the part of our brain that's processing scent to relate to the part of our brain that is giving us language, because geographically they're on opposite sides of the world. So I don't know if that's related to our problems about coming up with words, but it might be. And I find that one thing that's really interesting to me is how scent will trigger a long ago memory for me much more often than a sound or a sight or a word will.
Our society spends so much time and money on suppressing odor or smell that, and thinking if you compare that to certain parts of India, where it's just smells that we probably wouldn't even be able to identify.
Right.
Would they, do you think, in their writing, have a much better way of describing that?
That is a really good question. But the thing that, actually, Indy would be an interesting example because so many of their authors write in English.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the other parts of the world, we would only be accessing their work through translation.
Right.
Into our own kind of impoverished vocabulary for talking about scent. But that would be an interesting thing to read some Indian authors and see, can you smell what this place is like? But yeah, it is interesting how our society is so obsessed with covering up smells of all kinds. Other comments about this exercise or how it went for you? Yeah.
I didn't write about smell, I wasn't sure. I tried to write about light and seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to let you know that in Freshman English 101 for foreign-born students, I wrote an essay that based on the smell of my grandfather's house.
Mm-hmm.
And it went across very well, and it was printed.
Uh-huh.
That's, what, 53 years ago.
That's nice. And that is something that's highly
and
specific.
Whenever I experience any of those smells, I gain that emotional experience.
Right, you're in your back in that place. And the smell of a house is an interesting thing in that it is so specific. No other house smells like your grandmother's house or the house or the house you grew up in, that kind of thing. And it's interesting because it's actually a combination of everything about how the people in that house live. What they eat, what kind of fabrics they wear, how they store things, do they clean a lot, do they clean not very much. You know, there is it's highly specific. I remember coming home to my house, which I've only lived in for 8 years after being out of town for a couple of weeks, and I walked in and I thought, this doesn't smell like my house. Like something happened while I was gone. And I don't know what it was. And it turned out that I had been given a thank you gift the night that I had left on my trip that was a scented candle. And I just stuck the scented candle in my dining room, and then I left for 2 weeks and came back. And so the whole scent of my house had been overtaken by the scented candle. And as soon as I got rid of that candle, I was, oh, now it's back to being my house. scent is hard to describe, but also if you can describe it, it's so highly specific. So you can set aside your pieces of art for the moment, for the rest of class actually. And what I want you to do is think of, and we're going to spend most of the rest of our time together working on this, I want you to think of a place that is really important to you that you would like to describe in detail. Not just how it smells, but a place that you remember well enough that you can spend, you know, 20 minutes writing about different details about it, and I'm going to ask you a specific series of questions. So once you have that place in mind that you want to write about, and if you were here earlier in the week, maybe you want to describe the place where one of the events that you've been writing about happened, I want you to just write down what that place is. My grandmother's house, you know, the place where I got married, the summer home I've been to many times, whatever that place is, just write that down so you can keep it in mind.
And then just write about it.
Not yet.
No.
So does everybody have that written down?
I guess I don't have a very good sense of smell.
We're not just going to be writing about smell for 20 minutes, don't worry.
That would be mean.
So you just want you to write down the name of the place that you have in mind.
Is that what you're writing? Just the name of the place?
Yep.
Do that now.
Yeah. Does everybody have that? Has everybody picked one?
Sort of.
Sort of? Yes? Yes. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you a series of questions about this place. And I'm going to ask you a new question about every 3 minutes. So this is free writing, so if you are really engaged in describing one aspect of this place and I ask you another question about it, don't feel compelled to move on to my question. You can just stay with whatever you're describing. But I would encourage you to force yourself to spend the full 20 minutes, or it's not quite 20, it'll be about 15 minutes, writing down detail about the place. Because the more you think about it, the more that is going to come to mind. And things that, once you get into writing, you'll find the things that you thought you had forgotten about the place might actually come to you. So what I'll do is, I'll ask you a question, you start answering that question, and then every 3 minutes I'm going to ask you a new question, and I'll write them up on the board in case you don't
hear. So we
don't
start writing, but then when you ask us a question, we stop doing what we're doing? And
if you want to. Or if you're really engaged in still answering that first question, you don't have to worry about it, about moving to a different question. Okay, so first one, and this is the first of, how many, 5 questions. So the first one, of course, is what does this place smell like? What are the scents in this place? in 3 minutes, I'll ask you another question about it.
So we write those down, then we go to writing more description, or?
You're describing how the place smells, yeah.
How the place smells, or the event.
Next question, what does this place sound like? What does this place sound like? Next one, what does the air feel like in this space? What does the air feel like? Next question, what is the lighting? Is this in this space? Is it bright? Is it dark? What does the light look like? And now the last question. If you touch the objects or whatever is in this space, what do the textures feel like? What are the textures in this space? Last half minute to wrap up your description. So how many people actually worked on all 5 of the questions? And good.
Well, I kind of wrote them down, but my description of the whole thing, I didn't get very far because I was concentrating on all these.
Mm-hmm.
But I could go back and eventually add to the...
Right, right. And did you find that some were easier to answer than others?
Mm-hmm.
What was easy? Easier.
Textures were
textures
for me.
Mm. Anybody else find texture to be?
I don't know, sounds.
Sounds.
Is rubbery a texture?
Oh yeah, we can have a sense of what that feels like.
Everything seems easy to smell.
We started with the hardest one, it's true.
I chose a topic that everything fit. My garden.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
That was a good one.
Yeah, it would definitely depend on what
you
chose.
Yes, exactly.
Me too.
The house I grew up in would be like an uninsulated one in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And there was a lot of rain and a lot of woods
mm-hmm.
in it. And so it just those houses have a particular smell and touch and feel.
Mm-hmm.
I think a house like that in any space like that would be similar.
Right.
Somehow, like the longer you thought about it, the more things came to mind that you
mm-hmm.
didn't necessarily think of first time.
Other observations about how it was answering these questions or thoughts that came up?
The more I wrote, the more it drew me into that. I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel it all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then this
mm-hmm.
helps. This will help when we have something like this when you do.
Yeah.
Make the list.
Yeah, no, I do use this as a checklist, uh-huh. along with the one that we're going to focus on tomorrow, which is what things look like, which tends to be the thing that we notice the most. Although I think that if you're writing about childhood spaces, they it often isn't what you remember the most, because I think children are much more immersed in the sensory world, particularly before you learn how to read and write. You know, when you think about how things smell, and you know, little children are touching everything and they're tasting everything, and we sort of get away from that as we get older. You know, we realize you're not supposed to do that, it's not polite. You're not supposed to go up and sniff everything. But kids really do that. So tomorrow we're gonna focus more on the visual, but I use this checklist plus the visual whenever I'm writing about something and I want to be able to give the reader a sense of what this place, the experience of being there is. And I'll just make sure, you don't have to tell all the sounds or all the scents, because then each place you talk about would take up a whole book. But enough just to give the reader a bit of a sense. And as you're, you know, reading a writer who you love, look and see what that writer does to give you a sense of a place. And usually what you find is that writers have sensory preferences. There are some writers that are really good at sound, and there are some writers that are really good at talking about the quality of light in a space. But yeah, this is essentially a checklist, and it's a way that you can pretty instantly seem like a really good writer, because a lot of people don't think about these things. They only, at most, will tell you what things look like. And the other thing you're doing is you're giving this kind of data, and if you look back at the list, I wrote it down so I can read it to you, of smells of Holden, candles, bread, several bread, sun-baked pine needles, sweaty socks, roasted barley, dust and diesel, freshness of air. Essentially what we're talking about is what happens in this space. There are people doing things. Nature is doing things. And so by including this kind of sensory detail, you're giving your reader a sense of how this place is used. People are worshiping here. People are making good food here. People are exercising here. And it's a way to include a lot of information in a, you know, in just a phrase, or maybe even in just a word. Any other comments or observations or questions people have?
This is fun. This is really funny. If I see an old movie on television and it's in black and white and someone smokes, I swear I smell the smoke.
Yeah, I have the same experience when I'm watching a movie and I see something cooking on a grill. You know, I will conjure that smell.
That's funny.
So tomorrow, the writing workshop is at 11 here, and we're going to do some mapping and talk and really think hard about how things look and how things are laid out. And then on Friday, the workshop is at 4, and we're going to talk about meaning and how do we connect the events and the conversations and the doings that we're writing about to a larger meaning or to some kind of theme. And then for those of you that are here next week, I'm going to do the same series of workshops next Monday to Friday as well. So I don't want to have people miss dinner. 1 minute from 5 o'clock. But if you have any, if other questions come up for you, have any other things you want to ask me about, find me at a meal. And usually when my workshop is not right before Vespers or right before a meal, I just stay in the room for an extra half an hour if you want to talk to me about something that you're writing, either related to the class or not. And then on Friday after Vespers, we're going to have a sharing session where you can come and share some piece of what you wrote. And we're going to do that in conjunction with the watercolor class. And we still need to figure out exactly where that's happening, right?
We've usually had it in here.
Okay.
We need to announce it so
yes.
that people can come, because
it's on the schedule. It should be 8:30.
8:30. Okay, great. Great.
And someone needs to arrange to have some goodies from the kitchen.
I don't know how goodie arranging is done.
I don't know either. I'll just ask somebody what
okay.
do we need to do to have some cookies or something.
That would be great. So 8:30 in here on Friday. Come and share or come and listen
and
just come and eat.
And I think you usually can bring your own beverage when you come from the kitchen, that rather than them bringing a cup.
Right.
You know, that's
yes.
just simple. You just, before you come, bring the beverage of your choice from the kitchen or from your
from your private stash.
So 8:30 is the combination with the watercolors
yeah.
and this.
Yep. Yep. So it'll be presenting what people have worked on.
It's kind of
and those of you in the watercolor class, if you want to talk about something that's on the bulletin board, take it down and bring it with you here, or save it for your yourself. And also, one girl who painted something chose to play a piece by Debussy, which her painting made her think of rather than really talking about her painting.
Oh, yeah, that was lovely.
Wow.
Yeah,
cool.
You remember that. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And so
well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
Have a good dinner.